This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, a segment of an interview from earlier this year with Western Michigan University researcher Whitney DeCamp on the link, or lack of it, between violent video games and violent crime. But first, we discuss issues affecting transgender people nationally and at the state and local level. I sat down with the executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, Mara Kiesling, recently when she was in Kalamazoo. We were also joined by the executive director of Outfront Kalamazoo, Jay Maddock. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Mara, I'm going to begin with you. What has the last roughly year and a half since Donald Trump became president meant for the issue of transgender people, you know, the Trump administration as opposed to the Obama administration?
Well, it's been really rough. We have been targeted by the Trump-Pence administration. And I think it's important to say Trump-Pence administration because we do think a lot of that is coming from the vice president. We have been under attack in a lot of ways. They've tried to roll back federal protections. They haven't been successful actually at rolling them back, but they've been successful at saying they won't enforce federal law anymore to protect trans people. That's a temporary thing. We're fighting them in court. We're fighting them in Congress, and ultimately we'll win.
And I wanted to ask you about how much the change has really been in policy. Has the courts kind of slowed that down from letting those policies take effect?
Yeah, the court's been on our side and the law's on our side. So the president, basically, all they can say is we will not hold up our responsibilities and we won't enforce the law. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not impactful. There are a lot of people who are being hurt by this. And, you know, trans service members are clearly being hurt. Our national defense is being hurt. But the law's still on our side.
Jay, what about the state level? Has there been much of a change in the last year and a half? Or has, you know, it been status quo in Michigan because there hasn't been a big change in, you know, governor, state legislature, et cetera?
You know, I think Michigan has always been a state that has lagged behind on rights, particularly for trans people. And so over the last year and a half, I don't think this administration has necessarily changed the legal status or the legislative platform for trans people here in Michigan. However, what it has done is given this new permission to opponents of equality to be louder. And so we've seen an increase in bullying in schools. We've seen an increase in attacks and, you know, assaults against LGBT folks across the landscape, though politically, Michigan hasn't changed all that much.
It's something I guess I wonder is how much is the change in terms of law and policy? How much is the change in terms of tone? Some of the things you just mentioned there, Jay, that it may not necessarily be that there's a new law in the books. It may not necessarily be that there's a new policy, but there's a difference in how people react to what they hear.
Absolutely. I mean, and Mara might be able to talk a little bit of bigger picture of how that's changed across the country, but certainly in Michigan, on the west side of Michigan where we are, the tone change has been the most drastic over the last year and a half, where we're hearing more from people, whether it's, you know, perception or their reality of, you know, LGBT folks are calling our center because they are afraid. We're hearing more cases of people facing discrimination, and we're hearing more cases of people being, you know, verbally and physically assaulted, which is increasing their fear, which I think then has a much larger impact of that quality of life and that right to pursue, you know, as a full person and their authentic self in their work, in their personal lives, and in their homes.
And we are seeing that all across the country as the country is polarizing politically and people are being empowered to say hateful things because we have a leader who's saying hateful things. It is causing an increase in disrespect, discrimination, violence, and fear. Transgender children are scared, more scared than they were before to go to school. Their parents are scared. We're not the only ones who are scared. I mean, immigrant children are scared. Muslim children are scared. So we have solidarity in that, but we need to figure out how to turn that around.
Mara, I've heard you say in some interviews that there's still a partisan divide on this issue, but it has been changing, that there are more people who are Republicans who are starting to kind of shift on this issue. But again, there was certainly a change when
President Trump was elected and sworn in. So is the partisan divide in some ways maybe starting to reestablish itself on this issue?
You know, the American partisan divide in general is a lot different than it's ever been, and it's changing pretty rapidly. It isn't about conservative and liberal anymore. It's not about Republican and Democrat anymore. It is about people's view of culture, really. You know, there's lots of really good Republicans who I agree with and a lot more really good Democrats who I agree with. That's absolutely true. But, you know, more and more, this isn't a partisan thing unless the partisan landscape itself shifts in a way that is really about us versus them, which it seems to be doing. And we all have to try to fight that.
But I've also heard you say that there's been somewhat of a change because of, say, you know, there's a Republican who perhaps had a different stance on transgender issues until, say, there was someone in their family.
Yeah,
and there's more of that happening across the country. So is that kind of changing the dynamics a bit?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When you know somebody, it's harder to hate them in an abstract way. And, you know, the most important thing any LGBT person is doing, any transgender person is doing, is telling their story and educating the people around them, their families, their coworkers, the people they worship with. And when you, you know, when you have a handful of transgender people in your church who you interact with, it's a lot harder to think of them as this abstract danger.
Let's talk about a couple of different issues which have happened at the federal level. There's the case of a young man named Gavin Grimm, who has been struggling for a long time to use the male restroom in high school, finally got a ruling from a federal court upholding his side of the case, even though he has since graduated. How important do you see that ruling, Mara?
Well, it's really incredibly important. Gavin is just this amazingly strong, smart kid who really stood up for all of us. And just last week, another teenager, Aiden, I won't mention his last name here, but in Boyertown, Pennsylvania, stood up at his school too, and we just got a Third Circuit kind of a decision. It was a procedural thing, but a decision that said trans people can use the right restroom. What people don't understand, I think, is that this restroom question is a real red herring. For most people, it doesn't matter. I've used the women's rooms forever and nobody notices or cares and nobody gets hurt. But for a trans person, it is everything. If you cannot use the right bathroom at school, you simply cannot go to school. And if you can't use the right bathroom at work, you can't have a job. This isn't about which bathroom do I choose to use or what I feel happiest using. This is really about survival. And the way our society has been, you know, most people look and see there's a bathroom that says men and a bathroom that sees women. For a lot of trans people, it looks like the sign says, first sign says get arrested, and the second sign says get beat up. And we have to make those decisions every day. And it's just a bathroom, for gosh sakes.
And you actually went and made a bit of a point in North Carolina when that law was signed by the governor there of using the restroom right in the governor's office, right at the state capitol, to try to make a point here of how difficult it is to enforce the law.
Yeah, it was during a big day of protest about the ridiculous and dangerous bathroom law that they passed in North Carolina, and we were in the state capitol. And technically, it was the bathroom next to the door to the governor's office, but
so not right in his office.
It wasn't the governor's personal
close.
Bathroom,
right?
Which would have been gender neutral. This is going to shock your readers, but most people have gender neutral bathrooms in their homes, and it's not a really big deal. But yeah, I was, and really the reason I did it actually is because I had to use the restroom, and there I was, and what am I going to do? You know, your listeners can't see me, but I am a lot safer in a women's room than in a men's room. I've never caused a brouhaha in the women's room. Nobody notices me. It doesn't make any sense for me to use the men's room. So I use the women's room in the governor's office and then put it out on social media, kind of just meaning to be plucky. And it really took off, which was good and was great.
Now, good from that standpoint of drawing attention. Weren't you ultimately, though, arrested or faced legal charges because of that?
I was, not because of that. Later that day, we were still protesting in the House of Representatives. And technically, I was arrested for trespassing and fire code violation. This is a typical thing with protests. There were more, you know, you see those signs in offices and restaurants that say no more than 180 people, and they counted us up in one room and we were over the limit. And so, but everybody knew we were being arrested for protesting. That's just how they do it. But it wasn't technically because of that bathroom. In fact, the head of the state police was standing there when I used the women's restroom. And he heard me tell everybody I had just used the women's restroom, and he just kind of looked over at me and then just kept going.
We've also had some movement here at the state level recently, Jay. The Michigan Civil Rights Commission has basically issued a ruling that the Elliott and Larson Civil Rights Act includes a protection for discrimination based on sex. They say that means sexual orientation and gender identity. How important is that?
I think it's really important because, you know, earlier we were talking about tone. And that changes, you know, the tone that we're setting. And it says that LGBT people do have a place to go to report when they are being discriminated against or harassed. Whereas before, it wasn't clear if when we were faced with discrimination, if we had any path or place to report it, or if we were just automatically silenced because of our gender identity or our sexual orientation. So having this interpretation made clear allows a place for us to have our voices heard. I think the second part is that, you know, if LGBTQ people have faced discrimination, it's important to take that next step to make those reports because we've been told that this is a path and a tool that we can use. And so now we have to encourage each other to be brave and to step up and to use those tools so that our voices can be heard.
Are there times when it is tough for someone to come forward that, you know, they think they've got a real solid case, but yet, you know, if they come forward, that means perhaps that they are visible in a way that they would rather not be?
Certainly. And I think it goes even a step further than just being fearful of being visible in a way that isn't safe for LGBTQ people in Michigan or in many states, because we don't have a statewide protection that says that that will be backed. But it goes another step further of there's a fear of, you know, what will happen at their work, right? Because while, yes, the commission has issued that we can report, we aren't protected from being fired from our jobs. We aren't protected from being kicked out of houses and not being rented to because of our gender identity or sexual orientation. And so there's a risk there of coming forward, of you can file, but what does that mean? And then I think the deeper step is that we as a culture have also said no to LGBTQ people again and again, and have stated in ways in media, in the way that we talk about, in the legislation that we pass, that LGBTQ people are seen as less than. And so if that's the culture you're raised in, to then have to have the bravery to stand up for yourself and to voice that is quite the barrier to overcome.
So there was some pushback on the ruling from the Michigan Civil Rights Commission by some conservative attorneys who said, look, you know, the legislature, if you're going to change the law, it really needs to go through the legislature or perhaps through the ballot if you wanted to go that route. Is part of what you're saying there is that maybe that still needs to be done? I mean, if you're going to really have an enforcement mechanism, then it does need to be in the law. I know you would disagree with them on the mechanics of whether or not, you know, the Michigan Civil Rights Commission should do this, but are you saying that, yeah, if you're going to really make this stick, there does need to be a change in the law, not just a ruling from the Michigan Civil Rights Commission?
Right. I think first, I mean, I want to make it very clear that the Michigan Civil Rights Commission, it is their job to look at cases of discrimination. And so to explicitly state that they will hear cases of LGBTQ people is important and is something that we should be celebrating as a step forward for LGBTQ people and their families and their friends. And I also think that it's equally important that we do move forward to pass an amendment to the Elliott Civil Rights Act that includes LGBTQ people as a protected people. And I think that's a separate step, and that doesn't, they don't strike each other out. They don't compete with importance because they are both important steps to having LGBTQ people fully protected under the law.
It's good for business too, by the way. Businesses really like clarity, and having the commission make this statement and have this policy is really important. Passing the Elliott-Larsen amendments will mean that every employment lawyer in the state will send a memo to their client saying, hey, this is the law. This is what you have to do. And most businesses, most providers of public accommodations want to do the right thing. They just want to know exactly what their responsibilities are, and the law really will help clarify that.
We've been talking about federal and state, you know, laws and lawsuits and that sort of thing. If you go city by city, Jay, especially in Michigan, is there a big difference in terms of ordinances and maybe just in how people are received?
Certainly, because right now it is this city by city patchwork that's left up to ordinances. So in Kalamazoo City, we have an ordinance. Portage has an ordinance. Oshimo Township has an ordinance. But if I go into Comstock, suddenly I don't have the same ordinance. And so when you think of, you know, people's daily lives and where we live and how closely it is by from one street to another of where you can pass into different cities, that changes drastically. And I think that there's also a huge tone that gets set when cities stand up and say, this is, you know, these are our values. This is how we see our citizens. And when people feel like they are seen and heard and valued as their 100% authentic selves, it changes how they can show up to work, how they can show up to community events, and it just changes their entire view of what they can give and what they can get back from their city.
Jay, I remember that when the Supreme Court made its ruling on marriage equality, your organization held a news conference, and we talked that day, you and I and some other reporters, about how things had moved fairly rapidly on that particular issue. I guess I'm wondering if we talk about LGBT, is LGB moved along a little quicker than, say, T? Is that something where the progress lags as compared to how people view lesbian, gays, and bisexual people?
You know, I think that, and Mara might add to this, I think that there's been a lot of visibility given to lesbian and gay people. And I think that even when we start talking about bisexual people, there's been less visibility given to that part of the LGBTQ group. And I think we've seen a lot of movement and visibility given to the stories and lives of trans people. And I have to give credit to youth like Gavin Grimm who have stood up. And I think that the youth trans folks are really making those pushes forward to have their stories seen. And that's giving us great momentum.
Mara?
I completely agree. Policy or culture-wise, gay people are certainly further ahead. There just are more gay people. More families have gay family members. But policy-wise, gay people are a little bit more ahead or a little further ahead than trans people in most ways. But for instance, in employment protections, it is actually a lot clearer at the federal level that trans people are protected based on existing sex discrimination laws. If you discriminate against me in employment because I'm trans, it's because of my sex. It's because I'm a man or I'm a woman, or you think I'm a man, or you think I'm not enough of a woman, or whatever it is, it's about sex. So we're clearly protected by federal law, and the courts are saying that more and more. Sexual orientation, we believe the same thing, but we haven't quite proved it as often in court. And so we'll catch up. We'll catch up to each other.
Is some of the difference in perhaps how this is viewed, just the number of people we know? And I know, Mara, you have commented often on Caitlyn Jenner, somebody who is very well known. I mean, we've had a lot of fairly well-known gay people over the years. But Caitlyn Jenner was someone who we kind of got used to, you know, either watching the Kardashians or if you're my age, you remember as a kid watching Bruce Jenner in the Olympics. Does that change the way this is viewed at all when you know somebody, at least you think you know them in some way, and all of a sudden now you find out, well, this is somebody who is transitioning or has transitioned?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there until this January, there had never been an openly out trans state legislator in the country. Where you have multiple, you know, gay office holders in the Kalamazoo area. And they're all over the country. We have now finally, we're starting to get celebrities coming out as trans. and politicians coming out as trans. We have a very credible candidate for governor in Vermont who's transgender. I think she'll win the Democratic primary to run against the incumbent governor, and she's a very credible candidate. And as we start seeing that more and more, it will increase the education. It will increase people's comfort with us. And as all those people start having their kids come out as trans, that'll help too.
Mara Kiesling and Jay Maddock, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
Thank you.
Mara Kiesling is executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality and was recently in Kalamazoo. Jay Maddock is director of Outfront Kalamazoo.